He's working out at the team facility, for crying out loud. What kind of diva does that?
He's I don't know the kind of diva. The kind of diva is trying to insinuate a pathway to the Steelers. I mean, the thing is, the good thing about Ayuk is he's very bad at it, and it reeks of desperation. It's, you know what Ayuk is like. Here's what Ayuk is like, and I remember something like it in my own life. I was at Bleacher Report, and it occurred to me that they were asking us to do insane things, just crazy things. Rob Mahoney was there. They would come up, the algorithm would come up with something, some stupid article, because it was very clickable, and we had to just make it work. And I'm a bit of a people pleaser at that point. I'm in my 20s. I'm just trying to do my best. And one day I pushed back, and it occurred to me that they were way nicer to me than after that point. And then I saw another coworker, and she was just run out of there while trying to be nice to them. And I learned that if I acted like Keith Olbermann at SportsCenter, they would be nicer to me and be better to me. It didn't feel right, though. It felt like I was playing a role of just being an absolute dick. And so I realized that's what I had to do. And I would be petulant. I would be demanding. And it would work. And they were coming to me after a while. And they were asking me if I wanted my boss fired, if I had any issues with him, and if I just signed a long-term deal. You know, we could fire, you know, we could fire him. We could get rid of him. It's just, this is crazy. I totally negged them. It's the weird pickup artist stuff with the dating, but it never felt right. I felt ugly and gross every day. It wasn't coming. I'm not Chevy Chase, right? So I feel that way a little bit with Ayuk, where his agent is saying, you got to diva it up. You got to play the diva right now. And you got to have the, you got to have the cryptic stuff on the social media and everything else. And it's just nobody really, other than me, seems all that put off by it. Nobody takes it seriously. Nobody's responding to it.
If you were in a position to just mess with people a little bit, you didn't have a column, you didn't have a website, you didn't have a podcast, wouldn't you just, for fun, occasionally tweet a few emojis? Mm. Put out a few emojis on Instagram and just harmlessly let people react. I mean, it's got to be a little bit fun just to, you know, you got nothing to do. You're working out. Mm. You're bored. Everybody's got an opinion on you. Six emojis is, in the grand scheme of receiver diva Enes, pretty harmless.
Money talks, bullshit walks is true. Yep. We are all in agreement that that is accurate. If he was tweeting something like, the enemy speaks kindly and holds a knife,
Denny Carter,
that's when we're in trouble. That's when you have to be concerned.
AJ Brown's throwing sideline tantrums. DK Metcalf's getting ejected from games. Stephon Diggs got traded for a future second.
Yeah. Yeah. He might be cooked, though.
Maybe. I mean, he still had 100 catches as a cooked receiver last year.
Yeah, look, I don't want to write him off completely. You know, you never know. I'm just saying the playoff run was not impressive.
I think you're projecting on Brandon what you believe receivers are.
Oh.
And how receivers act. And all he's doing is like almost tongue-in-cheek imitating receivers. And the tongue-in-cheek is, but I'm not those guys. I'm not those guys.
Yeah. It's a lot of layers. It's a lot of layers. He seems cranky.
Welcome to the House of Strauss.
Yeah, go for it.
Stars hang with stars. Winners hang with winners.
Si un jour tu m'emmènes à la plage, j'aimerais t'en plonger dans les vagues. Je te promets que je resterai sage, mais tu ne comprends pas que je rêve de ça.
I think what Guy Haberman, and that's who's here in the House of Strauss right now, a man who is a broadcaster, a sports announcer. I think it's interesting that you've had vocal cord surgery. I think it's interesting that you, someone with some great pipes, Guy, that you now are compromised. I wonder if a little piece of your soul feels like it's been severed and it's healing up. You insist that this is not interesting, that my customers are going to hate this.
I think this will be your lowest rated podcast.
There's nothing at all intriguing about somebody losing the main tool of their own professional success momentarily for the sake of bettering themselves going forward. Yeah. Okay. What happened with you? Oh, let me set the stage. There's more interesting right here. Let me try to convince people of why this is interesting, which is what I'm always trying to do implicitly, in this case, explicitly. You had a very successful YouTube show with John Middlecoff, our friend John Middlecoff, talking Niners and football and some other things, and had this amicable divorce that racked the Bay Area with pain. Mom and Dad took us to the kitchen and gently explained to us that they would no longer be together. We don't even know what to do. And then, boom, all of a sudden, you have the surgery for your vocal cord and your voice is kind of gone as you're going it alone. You don't think that's interesting as a professional circumstance. You don't think you can provide any context to the people that would grip them, that would compel them. It's impossible.
This one's going to be your responsibility to ask questions that gets me to say interesting things. I mean, yes, all of that is, I think, mildly interesting. The connection between the two things, the timing, the play-by-play work that I do is wholly dependent on me sounding not like you can podcast with literally any voice is fine for a podcast, except this, like this one's not fine, right? If this is what I sound like always, I don't think I would listen to that. But the hope of like,
Ralph Barbieri had a very successful radio career in this market. Well,
I mean, I would argue Ralph sounded a lot better than I sound right now, but that's for somebody else, I guess. The way I hear it is, I think it sounds terrible. But like calling games, there's a much narrower accepted voice, a category. Like your voice has to, and I don't think I have a great, when it comes to like play-by-play people, right? My voice is fine. My voice is serviceable. I've had this argument with people who tell me it's better than serviceable. Fine, whatever. It's good enough. It's fine. It's not.
You got pipes.
Yeah. Well, we could debate that, but it's not your classic booming, authoritative, right? Like that. Kevin Harlan would be an example of that, right? Like that's almost prototypical. So, you know, I could continue podcasting if my voice never comes back to 100%. I don't know that I could really do play-by-play well. There are some people who have bad voices and do play-by-play. Not many. And I don't know if there's any that are good. But most voices are fine. Like, most voices are more than good enough, I think.
Who's your top five all pipes? And we can broaden this out to sports media in general. I would put Colin Cowherd on my top five all pipes team.
You know, Colin once did play-by-play back in the day, like my AAA baseball in Vegas, I think with Ken Korak, who I think actually is like, those are pipes. Like to me, Colin's voice, he's got a great voice. It's different than like, to me, pipes means only one thing, which is deep, powerful, like voice of God, right? Like that's pipes. And it has to be effortless, right? Like Korak has effortless pipe. Ken Korak, who's been the A's broadcaster for a long time, has effortless pipes. Harlan has effortless pipes, you know.
So how do you feel about all these New York guys? I mean, a bunch of the New York guys get made broadcasters. I talked about it with Bob Costas. You feel like they got a different aesthetic?
You talked about that with Bob Costas?
I did. I believe we talked about it with Bob Costas on this year's program. Yeah,
I gotta listen to that.
He might be listening, so you better not, exclude him from this pipes conversation.
Bob's fantastic. Bob's voice is very smooth, which is hard. Like pipes, first of all, having pipes, deep, like true, like what I'm talking about, voice of God pipes, doesn't automatically mean it's going to be a smooth voice. You know, I think a smooth voice is almost better than just the deepest. The deepest voice does not mean the best voice, first of all. But Bob has a very smooth voice.
Pat Summerall, top five all smooth.
Yeah, and also deep.
Yeah.
And also deep. But, you know, and he never really like maxed out his, he never, I don't know. I'd be interested, you know, he was, yeah, I enjoyed his voice a lot. Very easy to listen to. But yeah. Using, having a deep voice and using your voice correctly are two different things. I'm learning.
Yeah. Bob and I talked about how New York centric the announcers are. I don't have it all committed to memory, but so many of the top broadcasters are from the New York area, Bob being one of them, obviously Marv Albert, I think Mike Breen. Now I'm trying to
Breen was on.
Goosey, just pull it out of my brain right now. Basketball, I guess, especially has a lot of them. Al Michaels, I believe, is a New York guy. I don't know where you come down on the Al Michaels pipes conversation, but there's some subjectivity. It's a funny thing. This is what I like about this conversation, is that there's subjectivity to it inherent, but it's not completely subjective. It's not completely. Right. You right now objectively have a worse voice than those guys. But when you're healthy, I don't know. We could have an argument about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think the, you have to almost have to remove the pipes thing from it. Because to me, and maybe I'm defining pipes, but to me, when I talk to my broadcaster buddies about pipes, all that means is like pure, effortless, and deep, like effortlessly deep and authoritative. That does not mean best. I love Al's voice, and I think Al's a great broadcaster, right? And I laugh sometimes at the idea of like me, but like, oh, I think Al's pretty good. Like, yeah, no shit, dude. but I think I love Al. Yeah, Al has it. But there's different ways to be excellent. There's different ways to be great. There's different voices. And I think you're right. Like, it is very subjective. Some people like this person's voice better than this person's voice, whatever. Until you get to a point where there are, I do think it is also in a way objective. So you just nailed that. But I
think the style, I like New York style. Now we're talking like it's food. I like New York style.
Yeah.
I don't like Southern style. There's no offense to the South. I don't like Pat Summerall, rest in peace. I don't like the Braves announcers of yore. I don't like that languid pattern that does not rise and fall with the action. What I like about the New Yorkers, I feel like they're emotive. I feel like they bring the energy. They bring that gruff energy, and that doesn't happen with some of the Southern announcers.
Now we're talking about style, not voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We shifted it.
You know, I think once upon a time, the belief was that the mid-Atlantic accent was the perfect accent for broadcasting, whatever that is. Okay.
The mid-Atlantic accent. It's sort of fancy and it's British, but it's not exactly British. It's high class.
My understanding was that a touch of Southern, but not too much. A touch of the Northeast, but not too much. A little, you know, Midwestern, but a little folksy, but not too much. Like, I think that's kind of the... That's all. Vin Scully was from New York, by the way.
You
know, and it may be as simple as that's where the decisions were made almost predominantly for a long time in broadcasting was in the Northeast. Right. So it could be that simple.
Yes.
Right. That's where your biggest teams were in the Midwest. Once upon a time, these radio stations were absolutely, you know, the KMOX where the Cardinals were. The Cardinals became a very national brand because their radio station blasted throughout the nation and the South in particular, right? You get Cardinals fans throughout the South because they grew up listening to the Cardinals because the Cardinals radio station, you could hear it everywhere, you know?
Yeah. I mean, this gets at something that's even broader than the accents, which is what you said right there about, well, maybe this just got popularized because of the media concentration versus some sort of objective aesthetic that people prefer in a New York announcer. I think about this stuff all the time of, is an accent inherently more appealing than another accent? It's a little bit fraught. I sometimes wonder if it's a myth. People say, oh, French, the French accent's so beautiful. And I go, yeah, I don't know.
Well, you know, I think to me, one of the best qualities a broadcaster can have is to wear well, meaning over months and years, right? Do you wear well? And that's where a discussion about accents, I think, can be. An accent might sound good for a day, but after 3 months, you go, I got to get out. I can't listen to this anymore, right? And so that's where I think sometimes, like, probably for anything that is mass distribution and mass consumption, sometimes the thing with the least identifiable parts, the hardest thing to categorize, right? The most vanilla plain thing. Sometimes, I'm not saying it is or it isn't, but like sometimes that's the best thing for mass consumption.
Well, and sometimes what people want is just what they can't get elsewhere because it's not the model. I mean, Harry Carey, what even is that people loved so much? I don't know what that
personality
is. Yeah. Yeah.
Authenticity. I think
personality. Yeah. And that's somebody not trying to be a thing. And how do you really model that? I mean, now I just thinking about this. I do think objectively the New York accent for the announcers for big games is better. That's just my take right here. I think it's better. And no offense to our Midwestern listeners, I don't think your accent is necessarily best suited for big game broadcasting. I just you can get mad at me. That's my take. There's something about the Midwestern accent, a little too nasal. You know, I can't picture just big time announcer. Like, what the heck happened? You didn't steal the bag?
that's a good. I mean, Joe Buck, I guess, is from the Midwest. Does not sound like that, right? Has an excellent voice. Joe's got an excellent voice too. His voice is excellent. And then additionally, is a very good broadcaster. But, yeah, when you do it like that, I would say that's not the most attractive accent I've ever heard. But
it's a strange thing, man. It's a strange thing. Mariah Carey, when she sings, beautiful. When she starts speaking in the thick New York accent, I go, this is weird.
Interesting.
Sorry, but you were going to say. You're going to say, guy.
No, I mean, think of all the British rockers that, like, as a kid, certainly I had no idea they were British until you told me, oh, that person's singing. Can't you tell? They don't sound American. Like, oh, I don't know.
I like how you said until you told me, like I specifically told you. Like you had no idea that the Beatles.
The Beatles were the one that I knew because I knew the whole story of the Beatles.
Yeah.
I wasn't just listening to their music, but like if Led Zeppelin came on the radio as I'm in the car with my dad, we're listening, I wouldn't go like, oh, listen to these British people. Singing is a different thing. You can tell when somebody's at least talking.
Speaking of subjectivity, guy, I love how I have no idea if this is terrible podcasting or great podcasting. It's a weird thing. You go through this because you're going to say.
I was going to ask you, why did you want to talk to me about my voice? I mean, you kind of explained it, but what is the question that you have?
I mean, you're overthinking it because you're such a professional. Number one, that's just number one.
I just think if I'm going to sound like this, I really better have something interesting to say. I could tell you what happened. Let me tell you something.
Okay.
Before I had vocal cord surgery, I had a very hard time finding anyone that could just give me some insight as to what exactly I was dealing with, even though it turns out what I was dealing with is not uncommon at all. So one lesson from this has been, as I've told people what I have, and I've said to people, if you might have something the same, let me know. I'll help you because it took me a long time to get a solution here. Why I had what I have, it's still for debate. It's not exactly known. And it turns out is common. There are probably people who have it, who maybe aren't broadcasters, so they don't care. They don't pay attention as much to it. I had what's called a granuloma. It's a bump on one of my vocal cords, and your vocal cords open and close to let air in and out. And sometimes if you have a bump, they don't close and create a tight seal. And so what would happen is if they didn't close properly, air would get through and I would suddenly lose my voice like that. Not all the time, not as I'm talking to you like this, predominantly as I was projecting my voice. So it would make it annoying if I were in a loud restaurant. where, by the way, Marv Albert doesn't go to loud restaurants or didn't the night before a broadcast. Very smart, because that's where you like, if you've been in a loud restaurant, you know that your voice probably a little sore afterwards in the next day, loud bar, right? But for me, if I'm broadcasting games and there'd be a big catch or Strauss goes up for the dunk, I couldn't trust in that spot that I could project my voice without it kind of short. The best way to describe it is kind of short circuit. It wouldn't go away, but it would drop out for a split second in the middle of a word. And, you know, if you're podcasting or just casually talking, it's annoying. You lose a little vocal stamina. I would lose vocal, but you can survive that way. Ultimately, I wasn't at my best. And so, you know, all this time for several months, going back to last July, doctors are trying different things. If you tell a doctor you have this feeling, the first thing they'll probably do is prescribe like Prilosec, an antacid, omeprazole is what it's called, over the counter. They think sometimes it can be, if you have heartburn. I don't have heartburn. I didn't have heartburn, but they have silent heartburn is what they call it. And they give you some of that. They gave me a steroid inhaler and it made it a little better. I got off coffee, which sucks, but it eventually plateaued. And so I went to a surgeon and he gave me three options. Option one, they'll just stick a long needle down your throat and basically give you Botox for your vocal cords. Mm. And the purpose is that it forces your vocal cords to hit in the correct spot instead of the incorrect spot. Two, they can do a little incision in your throat and implant like Gore-Tex in your vocal cords to permanently make them a little larger. What? So they connect in the right spot. Or option three, which is what I chose, which is a quick procedure, like 20 minutes, requires you to be intubated. They put the needle in. They give you a little filler, basically, to plump up your vocal cords, but it's 2-3 months. It's temporary. They laser off the granuloma, and then they do another injection with a steroid to hopefully prevent that thing from coming back. So that's what I did. And it's pretty common for an ear, nose, and throat surgeon to be able to do this procedure. It turned out, and this is the funny thing, anybody that's had a surgery for the first time knows this, sometimes you learn things about your body that you don't know, right? Like we live with our body all day long, every day, but we have no clue what's going on the inside. I heard somebody say recently, Dan Harris on a podcast, he said, you couldn't pick your pancreas out of a lineup. I thought it was a great line. Like I live with it every day. It does so much for me. Turns out for me, because just of the way my head is built, my face, my throat, it's a little harder to intubate me. So it took them 20 minutes to do that. So that may be why my recovery has been a little longer. I don't think you're supposed to sound like this 2 weeks later, but I sound like this 2 weeks later.
That is interesting. regardless of how you feel about it, at least I find it interesting. And my philosophy at House of Strauss is if I find it interesting, maybe you, the customer, will not, but at least I have a fighting chance. If I feel it's boring, there's no way I'm not conveying any of that. And I have been interested in this topic, Guy, for over 10 years. Over 10 years I've been interested in this topic. It all started with a 2013 New Yorker profile on Adele's vocal cord surgery.
Yeah.
I found myself absolutely gripped by that article. It was profiling not really her, but the genius surgeon who fixed her vocal cords. And it really got into explaining what happens and why voices change and why singers, like athletes, they decline. And a lot of it's the scarring on the vocal cords. And this whole new field had popped up of being able to take the scarring off and to do it in such a way where you're not actually in there, but you're performing the surgery. How do I even explain it? Almost like a video game and your little proxy hands are down there doing the thing. I'm not doing a good job explaining how it goes.
It's just it's robotics. Is that what it is?
I think so. But it saved Adele's career is what it did. And the surgeon was a big music fan himself. And it raised certain questions such as, is this going to become increasingly common? So much of what we think of as aging is the voice. You sound older. Mm-hmm. I remember my grandpa at the end, and he almost sounded like he was in some sort of fog, that Harry Carey fog, and I couldn't even break through to him. But if the future is going to include more surgeries like this, then musicians get to be musicians for longer. Rappers get to be eternally young, and we get to sound eternally young. And I just find that to be a curious outcome that nobody necessarily predicted. Most of the aging stuff people talk about is visual, and how we look to the world. But I'm intrigued by how we sound to the world youth. In a way, I feel one thing you did, Guy, perhaps, is preventing an injury, preventing decline. But maybe at the end of this Patty and Selma phase that you're in, you sound young again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's great from a broadcasting standpoint to sound too young or young at all.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly.
Mm.
And I think one thing that's funny about broadcasting is that, there's a certain vernacular that gets used often by play-by-play people in particular that sounds weird coming out of a young person's mouth.
Mm.
And it's best just to be yourself and talk like yourself, but you grow up listening to a certain person, John Miller, let's say, who's got a beautiful voice.
Oh, beautiful.
He's on the list. There's only one person that sounds like him, but if you try to sound like him, particularly as a young, if you try to sound like or talk like Vin Scully as a 20-year-old, you're going to say things that only 75-year-olds say, and it's going to sound funny. Right.
Like no young person says adios pelota. Not even adios pelota
is a good one. That's a great one, right? But I just mean like figures of speech, yeah. Right? Like the word dandy. If you're 20 and you imitate Vin Scully, like we got a dandy here today, it doesn't sound authentic. So I don't think like is the point if you're Bruce Springsteen, who I saw on Sunday night and is an absolute rocker. I saw him at Chase Center. It's an incredible show. I've never seen Bruce before. I'm not really a Bruce. I like Bruce, whatever. But I don't know
I think it's sad that you're so committed to this idea that the announcers need to seem old to people, that you're effectively LARPing being a Bruce Springsteen fan in order to convince.
No, I'm not saying. I'm saying I don't think announcers necessarily sound better when they're 20 than when they're 50.
You're getting at a real thing, though. I remember when Noah Eagle came on the scene, son of Ian Eagle, and his voice sounded so much older. And then at halftime, they would show him, and I go, no, don't show that. Don't show that. It's weird now. Looks like Frankie Muniz back there. I don't want that. That's not what I want. You know, we want things. I've said we want things. We want our nature documentaries to be narrated by an old man. Is that fair to young women? Probably not. But for whatever reason, people want David Attenborough. People want Morgan Freeman. That's what people want. And I think you're completely right. For whatever reason, we want the broadcaster. You know, voice of God's got to be old. He's got to be old. And that's
maybe the voice of God is a 7-year-old. That's a good point. I think that also comes from like, you know, the public address announcer. It's coming from, you know, the quote unquote voice. It's unseen. So I think that's part of why you get the voice of God phrasing, right? Because these sounds are coming in a booming place from up high and you can't see who's talking. So fundamentally, I think that's maybe part of where that voice, but you're right. It's also about how it sounds. But my point is, I saw Springsteen, and most people I learned that see Bruce Springsteen in concert, like one person guessed, they said, I bet 95% of the audience here is seeing him, not for the first time or the second time, probably the 10th or the 12th or the 13th time. Mm. And I said, well, how does he sound compared to how he used to sound? And they said, oh, it's not, no, he used to sound so much better. But he's 74 years old, Ethan. Yeah. He sounds, he still gives it everything he has, which I think if you work with your voice is really what you want. Sure, I guess you want to sound at your best. Adele would love to sound 30 or 25 or whatever forever. But really what I want is not to sound a certain way. I just want to be able to give it everything I have. And whatever that sounds like, hopefully I learn to use it better over time, right? Like, when I come out of this, my voice is not going to sound any younger. That's not my procedure. It will just be the best that I can make it. But I can learn to use it better than I knew how to use it when I was 10 or 15 or 20 years younger. And that is really the key to the whole thing. I got the beauty of like telling people you had a procedure is that people reach out and go, oh, I have some insight for you.
Yeah.
And a guy I know who's an opera singer reached out to me and he said, oh, I got all kinds of stuff for you. I've taken lessons from the best, right? And I can tell you the way to warm up, the way to warm down, the exercises you should do. That's great. I did no exercises. I did no warm-ups. I never cooled down my voice, right? It never occurred to me. So, you know, I will get hopefully an ability to use it more properly because of this that I never even explored previously. Now, if I were a singer or in theater, I probably would have been aware of that and explored it, but I didn't and I had it.
Mm. No, there's certain jobs.
He told me Pavarotti hated air conditioning. Pavarotti thought cold air was really bad for the voice, but he loved cold water. But Pavarotti would not want the air conditioning on in a car. And if it was cold outside on his way to the theater, he would run from the car to the theater to get as little cold air down his gullet as possible.
Do we think he's right? Or do we think that he was just superstitious?
I think everybody needs to find the best way to use their instrument, right? So like, if that's what he felt made him better, first of all, then yes, he's right. Secondly, yeah, cold and dry air makes you feel worse, makes your throat feel worse. When I go to Vegas or Denver or like, it feels bad, you know, to the opera singer, Gus, he said, if I travel, I just go to the local CVS and I buy a humidifier for my hotel room. Hotel rooms, getting the temperature right in the hotel room is the worst. And you wake up with a dry throat all the time. So, okay. So yeah, I think Pavarotti was right.
Something about having this conversation with you, because I've seen so many of your YouTube shows. All my mind is doing is creating little mini, potentially viral YouTube clips. Immediately in my head, it popped up. What Pavarotti was terrified by, and then you have a freaked out look at Pavarotti. That's sort of
I love that.
What scared Pavarotti?
Yeah.
people coming to try to figure out if Brandon Ayuk's going to be traded, and this is what we're doing over here. I mean, okay, well, let's you were saying
move on.
No. Well, this is what I like. You're such a professional. You return to the topic when I get distracted and I throw you off a topic. You return to it. You complete it. You're very good at this. Okay. I'll have to ask, why did you and John Middlecoff break up? Why aren't mom and dad together, guy? We're very distraught over this.
Well, I mean, we did like a long podcast where we explained the whole thing. And
I know. I understand that. But we want the truth. You guys were obfuscating. You guys were being direct with us. We can handle it.
I don't think that's true. You know, it was not a sudden thing for us in the sense that like we'd been talking about it for a while. I mean, definitely over a year. I mean, I think anyone that watched us, which I don't know how much crossover with your audience there is, but I'd been doing a lot of stuff on the channel, on the YouTube channel, on the podcast solo for a while. So people have been like, oh, something's a little different here. I think it's very simple. Like John's time and my time had been largely invested in that show. And then things change in your life and the amount of time you can invest has to be proportionate to the amount of money that you make and how much money are you making doing other things and where is your time and attention spent. And so, you know, there were times certainly, and I think we talked about this in the show, there were times where it made more money, where the ad agency dollar was easier to get. And so it was an amount that was easy to split. And then for the amount of time that gets invested in it, you go, well, are we willing to continue putting this much time in for the split that isn't as much money that for one person would be better than it is for two? And John does a lot of stuff, obviously, with his other Three and Out podcast on The Volume with Colin. And, you know, it got to the point last year where they would do like a Sunday night live stream, and then we would do a Sunday night live stream.
Ooh, that's a lot.
So that is more work than we had been doing previously, right? Or like than he had been doing previously, for sure. So, I mean, it's not any one thing, but it's all of those things are factors. And then you add to it the amount of work, not that we had been doing, but that is required to continue to help something grow, right? Like we were doing three podcasts a week. Three, if you really want a YouTube channel to gain momentum at the size that ours was, you kind of got to do more. You know?
It's a threshold. It's a threshold thing. You know, this, it's such a thin margin between this thing is growing and this thing is shrinking. That's sort of something I can relate to. And just Maze, break out, why Guy and John Middlecoff broke up, and also use the picture of a freaked out Pavarotti. Anyway, you were saying, sorry.
No, I mean, so
experimenting over here.
Yeah. In hindsight, if I'd known I was going to get this done, I probably would have done it back when he could have done a lot of stuff on the channel by himself. But I'm kidding. I don't think it matters. But here's where the two things do tie in. My voice sounds awful. Like, I would not listen to this voice, this person speak that I'm right, that I am right now.
It's growing on me, but yeah.
It has gotten better in the last 2 weeks. A buddy of mine told me, he's like, I think it has a little gravitas. But it's not great, right? YouTube and not the podcast so much, but the way YouTube works with kind of velocity and momentum. And so I have been doing some shows the last few weeks, definitely like the last week, that I probably wouldn't otherwise do because I don't want that velocity and momentum to come to a complete stop. Right. So that's where the YouTube part of this comes into play. Now, it's not painful for me. Like people are like, I don't know, man, shouldn't you be resting? No. A doctor says I'm fine. I don't need to rest. I lose a little stamina, but it's not painful. And it, like, shockingly for some people who are hearing me for the first time, this is better than it was 3 days ago and better than it was a week ago. And it's actually at its best. If I talk very high, it's actually at its smoothest. But I know it's not the best content I can do. And my preference would be not to put that content into the world. But at the end of the day, we're all going to die. So whatever, you know, like, who cares? Well, if you want to listen to it, don't listen to it.
That was my mentality. And I'm not
offended. Like, people think, here's the last thing I'll say, Ethan, is like, people think like that they can't, like, that I'm offended if they don't listen. Like, I don't do whatever you want. You know, you don't have to tell me. I'm still, don't worry, man. I'm still listening. It's okay. Like, I get it. I understand how it sounds. But there's a game we're all playing here in the content business that I'm continuing to play at less than 100%, because it's better to play the game than to not play that game.
Well, you wanted to know, why did I want to do this? What was my mentality with this? And it was content good. I do that. That's my decision making a lot of the time. Content good.
Yeah.
This might be, as you think, the worst podcast I have done. I don't believe that to be the case. I think you're a very compelling creator, is what I will say. And I think this is a good podcast.
Which I will defend. I hate that word, by the way.
I know. I'm sorry about that, but you are. And I ultimately book two people every week, and I don't always have a good theory as to why, but I have to pull the trigger eventually and start making my requests. And I can hand-wring all day about how, you know, the guest I had today wasn't, I don't know, whoever, like whatever big fish guest you want to name for whatever timely reason that you could come up with. Or I could just have interesting people on and see what happens and keep the content going, because ultimately I have no idea what my customers are really into when it comes to a podcast. That's the dirty secret. I have no idea what you guys want. I don't know. I really don't know.
Huberman takes.
Well, that was a good example. You texted me about the Huberman. We had Kat Rosenfield on, who she writes about culture. She doesn't write about really any sports whatsoever. In theory, that's my audience. I literally booked her, and I'll give credit to the person who made the suggestion. I've got this founding membership thing where people can pay more money to have a extended conversation with me. And I've done a bad job checking. It's hard in the back end to check where those are. So I apologize. Email me at houseofstrauss@substack.com if I have not arranged for one of these. But I had one of these conversations with one of my very good customers, and it's just one guy, and who knows if he's correct, but he was saying, you need to do more non-sports. That's what you need to do. And he might be right. He might not be right. I don't know, but I figured, okay, I'm gonna try it. I've had Kat on once. I'm waffling on who to book. Let's have her on again. I'm interested in what she's been doing of late. I want to talk Huberman. I have no idea if you guys want to hear us talk Huberman, but the podcast did well. It drove a nice clump of subscriptions. And so from a business perspective, at least, it was validated as something customers would be interested in. But I don't know. I have no idea. You understand what this is like, Guy, where you're basically having a conversation with your friends, and then you've got the weirdness of reading how a bunch of people feel about that. Think about that right now if you're listening to this, how weird it would be if the conversation, and I'm not complaining, I'm just talking about the weirdness, if the hour-long conversation you had with a friend was then open for discussion and people started to analyze, I don't know, the way you pronounce biopic, which I guess was a topic on my last podcast.
I did notice you didn't say, you don't say biopic.
That frustrated people.
But I don't know which is correct.
I mean, I don't give it much thought, but that was apparently a source of some frustration that I could. You could have asked me 1,000 questions, grilled me about what is going to frustrate people on this episode. I could not have come up with that in 1,000 questions, but evidently. And so there's just, when I write an article, I'm very confident in what it does and how it works. I don't know how you feel about this, because you've been very successful in the YouTube space having conversations. It's mystifying what people want. So you're just better off making stuff and seeing what happens, even if your voice is scratched.
So the last part I fundamentally agree with, right? Like, if something has to be the worst thing you've done, so something will be the worst. There will be the worst article Ethan's ever written.
Yeah.
Whether you write 500 of them or 10. So if you write 500, okay, better chance. There's a lot more that aren't the worst one you've ever done, right? So now, that said, there is a baseline level of what people have a right to expect from a quality standpoint. And if you're just putting out content for the sake of it, there is a floor where people go, wait a second, this is thoughtless. This is not interesting. Yeah. And then you can, you know, in a weird way, if you only do one a week, it takes people a lot longer to figure out it's not interesting. If you do 5 a week, I can tell pretty quickly, like, So there is, like, I do think there is a responsibility. And John and I talked about this a lot. We're like, I would do a 15-minute YouTube, and, you know, putting it on the podcast feed is good. Anything you put on the podcast feed is good, because you put ads in it. So that's good. But occasionally I wouldn't put something on the podcast feed, because I'm like, this is just disrespectful to the consumer, because they click on it thinking, this is Guy determined or John determined. This is good enough for a podcast. And then it's just like me breaking down Brock Purdy video. And it's like, that's not good audio. It's, some things don't work in an audio medium. I remember one time I did a kind of as a joke, I started grading 49ers practices while I was out there. There's a, for people who aren't sports fans, there's an analytical website called Pro Football Focus, PFF. And they grade everything that happens in a football game. So I created Guy FF, GFF, and I would grade practice. And the reason was, there was this quarterback competition. People who are sports fans or Niner fans don't need the explanation. And I remember one time I did a practice breakdown And I'm like, all right, here's the scores for today. And Kawakami texted me. He's like, that's probably not your best podcast. I'm like, yeah, you're probably right, Tim. That's a good point. That's probably not an easy, me doing all these numbers is not a good listen. You know, it's not a great listen. And it's good. Like, I think one of the biggest things I'm thankful for in my media career is that I was already in media in the early days of Twitter. So I was in media before, I was in media when people wanted to say something mean to you, they called up your radio show and said it to you. Mm. Or if they wanted to be mean to you, they just sent you an email that was 500 words long, right? Like, I can remember very specific emails I got that were mean. Yeah. And what I learned was, I remember one in particular, this is years ago when I was doing local radio, this is pre-Twitter. And I remember being very fired up about this email. Like, I wanted to really stick it to this guy. I remember I was golfing when I got it. I was like, fuck this guy, man. I'm going to tell him I'm golfing to show him I don't care. But of course I cared. I was upset.
Of course.
So I didn't send him a picture of me golfing. I ultimately sent a very nice email back. And the reply I got was, oh my God, I can't believe you actually read that email. Yeah. I feel bad. Yeah. That was really mean.
Yeah.
And I think the problem on the internet and social media a lot is that tone gets, I think most people are critical, kind of tongue in cheek. Yeah. I know there's a lot of negativity. I don't want to dismiss it. But I think a lot of what happens is the way that like friends talk shit to each other. I see it all the time, like in comments on my videos, where it's like somebody, it feels kind of angry. It feels like they're talking shit. But why do they comment on all these videos? Because they actually consume the content.
Oh, and I think if you Reddit's the craziest with that. In what way? Well, just that so many Reddit fan communities hate the thing they're a fan of. Oh. I shouldn't be as interested in this as I am, but I'm completely mystified just because I can't relate to it. But you look at so many subreddits of some popular podcast and you'll just read all these people shitting on it with utter vitriol. And I go, I don't understand why you do this.
I think it's very simple. In the same way that like, I bet if we went to a Reddit, you got me thinking Reddit. If we went to a Reddit page that was like the Tesla page or the Mercedes page, or those people would have very strong opinions. Apple's probably a great example. They would have very strong opinions about the things that Apple is making and where they're making mistakes and how Apple should make them better. And it's as simple as I can say things to my best friend or my buddy or my brother or sister.
Oh, I think you're totally wrong.
Like,
I think
you're totally wrong. And most people are so familiar with each other on the internet. They feel like they know you, that when they talk, they are saying it like your buddy or your brother. Yeah. And people take it as stranger who I don't know being really mean to me. I think is like the vast majority of arguments on the internet.
You are right. You are right and you are wrong, in my opinion. Okay. You are completely correct in identifying this exact phenomenon and this disconnect where people have a certain tonality towards you because they don't think – they're almost trying to rib you because they feel this parasocial relationship where you're talking into their ears and they feel like they know you, so they feel like you can do that. But you can't really do that to somebody you're a stranger who's a stranger to you. And have it received the same way. You're totally right that happens. The Reddit phenomenon is something different where they really are oriented around the thing in a very negative way. I've seen it with the Red Scare podcast. I've seen it with some other subreddits where it, for whatever reason, maybe it's particular to that site. Do we call it a site? I don't know what we call Reddit. It just becomes this... It would be weird. You would notice it if there was, and maybe there is, and I apologize if I haven't noticed it. If there had been a John Middlecoff and Guy Haberman subreddit, you likely would have been exposed to this where everybody there is just shitting on how much they hate you guys.
Okay.
I just find it fascinating that's a thing.
So Reddit's the wrong example, but I stand by the rest of the analogy. Like,
you're right.
Apple, you know, like an Apple fan, quote unquote fanboy thing. Like, they'd have criticisms right? Like the most specific criticisms, actually, they would have would be from the people who love the product, would have the most specific criticisms. And I just think, like, growing up in that world, I just refuse to be offended on the internet. I refuse. That's one of my personal core philosophies. I'm not going to be offended by the internet. I'm just not, you know.
I've got an analogy for you to maybe help along what you're trying to say. This is a very meta neurotic podcast right now, Guy. I'm very sensitive now to how I've been interrupting you so much. Are people going to have an issue with that? You, customer, right now listening, is that something that you're going to be frustrated by? But I think this is a worthy analogy that can take us somewhere. And Anthony Mays has brought us to it. He says, talk about football, goddammit.
No, I don't want to talk about football.
Anthony is pacing around his house like a bull in a bullpen waiting for Niners content, to what you're saying, Guy. Debo Samuel, who is more critical of Debo Samuel right now, the Niner fan or the broader football fan? It's the Niner fan, the one who knows, the one who follows day to day. I know that you're more pro Debo than the recent Niner conversation, but that's like what you're saying about the Mercedes forum or the Apple forum, where the person who is watching on a closer level has more reason to be peeved about whatever than somebody at a distance, perhaps.
Yeah, and they also have better takes because they just know the thing better. Yeah. You know, I think athletes are a fun example of this, or musicians, or anybody public, really, which is that I think sometimes they feel like when they get criticized, people think that they are pointing out something that the person doesn't know, right? Like, if I'm critical of Debo, why isn't Kyle Shanahan critical of Debo? And Debo's like, fuck you guys. The head coach is way more critical of me than you are, except he does it with specific examples, right?
Yeah.
So, like, how dare you think that you care about this more than I, that you care about my performance more than I care about my performance? I think that's where there's a lot of rub, understandably, right? Like, how dare you think that you ripping me is the thing that's going to make me work harder? No, what makes me work harder is it's already been pointed out to me in the film room in front of my peers. And so I think athletes feel like they got to be like, no, dude, like, you're wrong. You don't know. Sometimes people know. People definitely know, right? It's smart people. It's a bunch of people. We're just, especially sports, because it's all out there for us to see. Like, we can see the whole thing.
Well, often we know, but we don't know the process. We know the results.
Yes. You know, I could see that sometimes we know. Sometimes we definitely don't know.
Yeah. I could see Debo was not doing a great job blocking in the playoffs, but I don't know how much of that is him not doing due diligence and how much was whatever the shoulder issue was. You know, yeah. It's like, I don't know. Yeah. I'm just on the outside checking it out. But I mean, Anthony needs to know. He needs to know, is Brandon Ayuk getting traded? We understand that you have seen into the future and you understand what's going to happen.
No, he's not getting traded.
Well, there you go. It's authoritative right there. Okay, well, let's get the explanation.
Well, it's, to me, it's, there's a fundamental rub. There's a couple of them. One is he's worth more to the team he's on than he's worth to other people. So they're not incentivized to trade him.
Yeah.
Two, he of all the players on the team, make the most sense to keep, actually, outside of the quarterback, because he's the youngest. Of all the 49ers' most talented players, he's the youngest. So he is the one that I think is actually most likely to be on the team the longest, even though right now it feels like he's the closest to being gone. I think he's actually the furthest from being gone.
Mm.
He's very, it seems, easy to deal with. He's a bad negotiator in the sense that, like, he's not creating a stink. And he actually might just play this year on the current contract that he has. That's a possibility. Because he, if he doesn't get a new contract, will make $14 million this year. You could do worse, right? He's not so underpaid that he should play extra hard ball and hold out and lose money. There's a world where he doesn't get offered the contract he wants. He plays for $14 million and he gets that contract next year, which is an absolute guarantee, right? He will get that contract in 12 months if he plays this year for $14 million. So
I find him to be a fascinating player and situation. Because of what you said, that he is more valuable to the team than to the league. He, for whatever reason, it just seems like it's difficult for Niners receivers with Shanahan to become something he trusts and likes. So you need to grow into the role, and you can't necessarily just replicate that immediately in the draft or even with the trade. So more valuable to them than to everybody else. But it's this other thing. There was this whole conversation, for those who do not know, about is Brock Purdy a game changer or a game manager as a quarterback, which I think, given how important quarterbacks are, I just think it's a fundamentally stupid conversation. You're either great, good, less good. Like that's how I see it. I actually think it's more pertinent to wide receivers because there are wide receivers who changed the defensive coordinator's game plan. Mm-hmm. They've got to account for you. They are freaked out by Tyreek Hill. They are changing what they are doing because of Tyreek Hill and his speed. He is changing the game. Regardless of how he plays that game, like Steph Curry, the defense has changed in fear of it. Brandon Ayuk, he does things so impeccably. He catches the balls he should catch. He runs pristine routes, but he runs a 4-5, and at least in the Super Bowl, and I know Dave Lombardi pushed back on me a bit, but in the Super Bowl, you could see it. The Chiefs did not appear to be doing anything different than they would have done for any other wide receiver defensively. So it's this interesting question of how much do you pay a guy who is excellent and doesn't make mistakes and is very professional and blocks for you. That's key. That's not unimportant. But it doesn't seem like defensive coordinators are scared by. You know, it's tough to account. It's tough to figure out the value. And I think one of the reasons he's getting frustrated right now is he's looking around the league and the league goes, I don't know if I want to pay a receiver who's not a game changer. I think that's what's happening.
Well, he sits in a tier that's pretty unique because he's not Tyreek Hill or Stephon Diggs in his prime or Justin Jefferson, but he's also better than like the next tier of guy because he's, one little saying I came up with last year watching Brock Purdy was that the most invisible superpower is consistency. And a very smart commenter said, no, the most invisible superpower is invisibility. I said, okay, that's a good one.
I'll go one level higher. The most invisible superpower is something else Brock Purdy does.
What's that?
It's not the consistency and not invisibility itself, because that's impossible. It's not loving God, Anthony, although that would be an interesting take for me to really wrap my arms around right now. It's throwing before the guy is open. He's being assessed in this way all the time where people are going, oh, I wasn't impressed. But all we're doing when we watch a football game is largely tracking the flight of the ball. We don't know when guys came out of their breaks. And I think the impressive thing about him, almost like a passer in the NBA where you didn't even expect the pass to go to a certain guy. They saw something in the play that you didn't see. It is often in that chemistry with Ayuk, it's throwing before the guy is open. I think that's something that is invisible because we see when the guy finally catches the ball, and it would appear that that's the thing he does. That's whatever his deficiencies, that appears to be his comparative advantage. And I would say that's fairly invisible.
It is because of a deficiency that he has that he does it, right? Most people have the deficiency, which is not a strong enough arm to throw late, but they can't also do the thing that you're talking about. And that ties in with Brandon Ayuk, because in order to throw with that much anticipation, the person you're throwing to has to always be where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there. And that's something that Brandon Ayuk does very well, right? He is the best friend of this. Like, if Brock Purdy is a gentle seedling, which is a good analogy because he now has a corn seed endorsement. But if he is, I don't know if you saw that, but if he is a small, gentle flower who could one day bloom into a large, sturdy tree, then the oak tree that's next to him, providing protection from the elements, that oak tree is worth more right there next to that seedling than it's worth in somebody else's garden, right? Or somebody else's. And that's Brandon Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk is his most reliable teammate, the youngest in terms of the most likely to be with him through his prime. And the person that he throws the football to the most. So that is, to me, like how the Niners are in this position and how Brandon Ayuk is in this, for his sake, an unfortunate position of being more valuable to the team that has him than he is to anybody else. Just in the same way that, like, my 2006 Honda Accord is worth more to me than it's worth to somebody else, right? Kelly Blue Book says it's worth like $4,000. I am going to drive that sucker into the ground. Why? Because I've kept it in good shape. I know it runs well. It's a nice car. It's got leather. The seats are beautiful. And it costs me nothing. The insurance is zilch. If somebody hits it, if it gets stolen, if it gets totaled, fine. Now I'll buy a new car, right? Because I have saved so much money on that thing for so long. The insurance is like nothing. I don't have to think about it. I know it's going to be there when I need it, right? And there is a value in that freedom, right? And that's Brandon Ayuk. And nobody likes calling a receiver a 2006 Honda Accord. But look around right now. The car market is a great analogy for cars. It used to be that if you said, I have $60,000 to spend on a car, you could get like shit. You are getting the sweetest car in the neighborhood. Now you're like, well, I mean, a RAV4 is 48, you know?
Yeah.
Or 40. That's a plug-in. RAV is 50. But like you can't get a new car for $20,000, let alone $30,000 if you want like anything cool in it. And that's the receiver market.
Maze is so fired up in the chat right now about the analogy about IU getting compared to such a staid vehicle.
It's also a bad, here's why it's a bad analogy, because it's my second car. Oh. Right. It's like the number, it's our second car. We have two cars. So, you know, it's not the car we drive. If I'm going to go to play golf at Pebble Beach, I don't take that car.
Yeah.
But the point is, like, it is good. It is more valuable to me than somebody else. Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Well, let's throw some football questions at you before your voice finally gives out.
It's not going to give out. I could talk like this for hours. You just don't want to hear it. So let's be honest about that.
I do want to hear it. It does. It has grown on me. I have no issue with it, but we'll leave that to everybody else. I think we'll call this dumb outsider takes. I've got
no one's made it this far. Trust me.
No one's made it this far. Well, no, but we're using these to break out for the YouTube with the really cool little graphics that you do, so we can splice it, we can dice it, we can do stuff like I go like rank Brock Purdy in your top five quarterbacks, and then guy ranks, you know, where whatever. We're not actually going with that one, even if people are interested in it. I've just seen too much of that particular topic. But I've dumb outsider takes about football, and you can either disabuse me of them or tell me that I'm really onto something. Right now, the draft is coming up. What are you giggling about? What is the giggle?
Because I know, even if I disabuse you of any of these takes, you still believe you have something. That's why I giggle. Even if I say Ethan, that's a dumb take, you're like, I think guys wrong. That's a good take.
You could disabuse.
Okay,
but the problem is that if I'm disagreeing with you there, I look even less likely to be disabused. So, you know, I'm almost in a weird way. I'm trapped. I'm better off.
But the outsider cannot allow an insider to tell them it's a bad take. Otherwise, the outsider's no longer the outsider.
There are just things I suspect.
Okay, go ahead.
There are just things I suspect, guy. For instance, I don't know if the league actually knows which positions are more important than other positions. I think it's weird that tight ends get half at the top end of what receivers get, when the greatest teams and the Super Bowl teams all seem to have great tight ends. Like, I suspect that they don't. And you could say, look, you're an idiot. These guys, they hole up in an office. They spend 110 hours a week on this stuff. They'll forget more about football than you'll ever know. But guy, we saw this happen in baseball where the people who knew and poured their heart and soul, they actually didn't know how things were relatively valued once you put data to it. And so this center out of Oregon, for instance, I saw you with Jeff Shorts talking about how because he's a center, maybe you don't draft him so high, but oh my God, he leaps off the screen. He looks so good. Jackson Powers or whatever his name is.
Yeah. Close.
And I was thinking to myself, I don't know. Do we know? I mean, he would know, former O-lineman. Schwartz would know, but I don't know why a center is less valuable. They touch the ball in every play. They're trying to stop guys from killing the quarterback. I mean, where do you come down on this thing? Do you think the NFL actually appropriately values the correct positions? I'll throw another one at you. I find safeties to be more valuable. I believe they're more valuable than they're considered.
Okay, so I don't think you're correct on offensive linemen. I do think you're correct on tight end. Tight end is more interesting to me for the sake of this conversation than center. Mm-hmm. Center, just the guard ends up like Chris Jones, who's the best defensive interior. Aaron Donald, right? These are the two of the best pass rushers in the NFL that rush from the inside. The guards are the ones most responsible for them. The center helps. But like, I do think it's fundamentally on offensive line just based on who are you blocking and how much responsibility do you have to block. That's why that happens there. Also,
yeah, can I say, I'm disabused. Disabused.
You disabused me. From an athletic standpoint, the people that play tackle, or there's just less of them than the people that play center. So just fundamentally, the body is harder to find. Now on tight end, I think it's a great point. I think it's a great take. I think we should grade good take or bad take. Whether it's right or wrong is kind of irrelevant, right? It's just it's a good take. Yeah. And the reason I think it's a good take is that there's so few of them. They are a scarcity. Tight ends who are great pass catchers and can block. And Travis Kelce's not a great blocker, but like George Kittle is. But there's so few of them that if they were actually all free agents, then they actually should kind of get paid the way that the receivers get paid. They're catching the ball.
Oh, how about this? You can't draft for them. Look at the recent track record for drafted tight ends. It's terrible on the top end of things. And if you draft a good one, you look at Kelce, look how long he's played. I mean, these guys, Tony Gonzalez, look how long he went. Antonio Gates, look how long he went. Right now, people are talking about how maybe Kittle, maybe run him out of town. He's getting old. He wasn't good in the Super Bowl. I think he got hurt. Who knows? But I mean, it's conceivable that you have high level Kittle for some years after this. So I think they're way undervalued. I mean, that should add value. If you can't draft for the position, then you should probably pay more for it.
In theory, the position should age well because you're big. So you're often defended by linebackers. So your speed is not the most essential quality that you have, right? Rob Gronkowski was just a physical mismatch because he was big. So I like that take.
Okay, here's another take because Anthony Mays mentioned Laporta, tight end for the Lions. There was this discourse around Purdy. Maybe you're familiar with it. Did you know that people were arguing a lot about how good Brock Purdy was, Guy? Are you aware that happened this season?
No, maybe it has. My neighbor mentioned it to me, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it was
my
topic.
Neighbor said,
it was
have you thing. Heard of this Purdy thing? And I said, no, what are you talking about?
Yeah. It was a thing. And a lot of what was discussed was that the talent surrounding Brock Purdy is so amazing that this is the reason, this is the cause for the last pick of the draft. He can't possibly be doing what he's doing. Yeah, sure, he has the best passer rating, the best passing offense, but it's this, the Avengers, Nick Wright called them, surrounding Purdy. I think that the surrounding offensive talent of the Niners, good, a bit overrated. I mentioned Laporta because if I look at what the Lions have right now, I think it's comparable. I can't look at the Lions. I feel like the Lions, name recognition wise, far below the Niners for the surrounding offensive talent. But when you look at what they have, I just think it's comparable. So that's my take. Is that a wild take that Niners offensive talent surrounding Purdy, very good. You know, you've got the best running back. You've got a top end tight end. We can debate Ayuk's value. That's very good all around. Debo, who you're defensive about, I think highly overrated at this point in his career. Very good. Maybe not, I don't know, the 2007 Patriots or whatever, whatever comp you want to do for greatest offenses of all time. That's the take.
So good take. Don't totally agree with it, but the take is good. I do think the Avengers analogy is good. Like the collection of the talent is part of what makes the talent special. Even though, you could argue Kittle's the best tight end in his prime. He's the best. I mean, but you could also argue otherwise. Nobody would argue Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk are the best receivers in the league.
No.
The number one, like the true number ones. Trent Williams is the best offensive lineman, offensive tackle in the league. Yeah. It's a solid take. I mean, I also think it's hard. The Lions haven't really won dick, as they say. So I do think there's something to be said for this group has been to multiple Super Bowls. They've showed up big in multiple big games. They haven't won the championship, but I'm very sensitive to teams doing it over and over and over again. Back to my consistency is the greatest, the most invisible superpower. Amon-Ra St. Brown's fantastic. The tight end is fantastic. Let's see it.
Running back explosive. They've just got speed. They've got more speed than the Niners do.
Yep. Yep. But let's see it last. Like lasting is part of the deal. It's why Frank Gore, I think, is such an interesting Hall of Fame debate because he played like 20 years by many measures. He's an accumulator, right? His stats just in the end added up to Hall of Fame stats because he played for 20 years. But he was never the best running back in the league. Is that a Hall of Famer? But at that position, people play for 6 years. So isn't being available for 20 years kind of a Hall of Fame trait? And I honestly don't feel strongly that he is a Hall of Famer, but I just find that to be a compelling argument.
Yeah, I would say yes. At least the passion in this region for him would speak to it.
Yeah. I do think the Hall of Fame should be kind of reserved for greatness. I know when I saw it, that was greatness. And I don't think he checks that box necessarily, but he checks a different box, which is availability at a high level for a long time, an amount of time that people aren't available for. So that's something, that maybe is undervalued. That's its own kind of greatness.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about that. I do like that it's difficult to make the NFL Hall of Fame. I hate the way it is in the NBA where it's everybody come on down and we don't even have our own Hall of Fame. It's just basketball. It's a basketball. I'm not so much into that. This is what we'll tease in the little YouTube breakout. Who does Guy think the 49ers should draft? It's got to name somebody. A plausible person. I'm going with the center. I'm so contrarian. You have not disabused me, sir. Jackson
Powers Johnson.
Yeah. I'm going with that guy.
In the last 20 years, drafting an offensive guard or tackle, or actually an offensive lineman too, in the spot that the Niners draft, the last five picks of the first round, I went back and looked, last 20 years, one center drafted in that realm, by the way, in a good center. It's like 50-50 that you're getting a starter. 14 guys, seven of them good, three of them all pros, true, you nailed it. So as someone who thinks they should draft an offensive lineman in that spot, that's a pretty good argument to say, well, should you? If he's not going to help you right now, this year, win a championship, should you? The question is, can they get anybody that can help them win a championship right now in that spot? They're going to have to replace a lot of this offensive line soon, including Trent Williams. And you could argue You're not going to get Trent Williams there. Most people don't. So just don't try. Do something else. Draft a linebacker. Draft a tight end. Maybe you draft the best tight end available there, even though it's not viewed as a good tight end draft.
I wouldn't. The fail rate on tight ends
is very high.
Also burned by Latu. Although I never know what they saw in him at all. He just
was a weird pick.
I have no idea what they saw in him. He just seems not good. But yeah, the fail rate on the tight ends is scary. Mims is probably not going to fall to them, but that's somebody, you know, that's somebody people be very excited about as a prospect.
Jonah Morgan from Arizona is the guy that my guy Jeff Schwartz says will be there and can be good. So, you know, I don't pretend to be O-line film study guy. I think what's more interesting, if people care about this topic, is the guys he said not to draft.
Sorry, do you mean Jordan Morgan?
Jordan Morgan, yeah.
So can I sound more like a dick when I said, excuse me, did you mean Jordan Morgan?
I did mean Jordan Morgan. I've called him Jonah Morgan for a long time.
It's a hard one. It's like Julia Gulia in the
wedding. I think Arizona, Julia Gulia. I'm going to see if I can cover myself here. Yes, Arizona has another good offensive lineman named Jonah, who's going to be like a top 10 pick next year. Savanaya. He's a true, like, lottery tackle, but he's not draft eligible this year. Jonah Savanaya from Hawaii. So, anyway, I'll cover myself a little there.
What I like about Jordan Morgan, and I, too, am not somebody who... I'm not somebody who breaks down the offensive line tape, but some of the negatives on him seem to be related to measurables. Although I'm looking it up and it seems like maybe I'm totally making this
arm
up.
Length. People think his arm length is not long enough to be a tackle.
Yeah. It just said 90th percentile when I looked it up. That must be for players overall, right? That can't be.
Must be because he, for tackles. Some people think he's a guard.
Thank you. Good. Okay. So I didn't make that up. I kind of like when a guy has some sort of trait that, is a reason because I side more on the how did you do, how did you play, how have the Niners failed with their picks? It's projection dudes, this projects as opposed to
production.
You know, were you good? And I don't know anything about anything when it comes to the NFL draft. That's why I look to you. That's why I loved. Yeah, you wonder, hey, what's good content? I loved the episode you did with Schwartz breaking down the offensive line guys because that's a perfect example of we don't know. Can you give me this behind the scenes knowledge of what this is? And that's something that YouTube is filling the gap of. This is a detour from my takes, my beautiful contrarian outsider's takes, but or maybe it's not. It's just a media take, actually. I tweeted it out. I wanted your thoughts on it. I feel like one of the reasons sports YouTube is eating the lunch of radio is this specific example. Right now, I would hazard that there are 10 times as many people in the Bay Area, Anthony Mays among them, who would prefer off-season Niners coverage to insider San Francisco Giants coverage. But when I put on 95.7 or KNBR, God love them, I'm just saying, there's going to be way more Giants coverage right now, which makes some sense because the season just started. I'm not saying it's a crazy decision. I'm just saying I'm violently opposed to listening to it. I don't care. I don't want it. I find myself in this cohort that is driven into the arms of you, guy, because of this. And is radio doing something wrong is what I'm saying. Should they adjust because of what's happening and YouTube attacking the market?
Well, I think radio has a fundamental problem that they cannot solve, which is that aside from the fact that like the format requires several 5 to 6 minute commercial breaks, which I can't skip. Yeah. The fundamental problem is that in radio, the consumer is not in charge of their own time. And on the internet, the consumer or just you know, digital. The consumer is in charge of their own time. I control what I listen to when I listen to it, when I listen to a podcast, and I control how much of it I listen to. A radio show must fill 2 or 3 or 4 hours. A podcast is only as long as it needs to be. So the person doing the content feels no obligation to say anything or talk about anything that they don't think their audience wants to hear or that they don't want to talk about. But if I listen to a 4-hour radio show, I'm going to hear the same topic probably 4 times, maybe 3, because that is the game that they have to play. If the best topic is topic A, then they're going to talk about it in the first hour, in the second hour, in the third hour, in the fourth hour, because the research says the listener listens for like 15 minutes, right? Whatever. You just want them to listen for 20. That's the game. You want them to listen through a commercial break. I'm oversimplifying it a little, but in podcast form, if your podcast is 4 hours before I click on it, I know that you're not going back to the same topic 4 times. I'm listening to you talk about a bunch of stuff for 4 hours. I know if I wait for the next hour and keep listening, you're not going to go back to the thing you talked about in the first 10 minutes. So there's just a fundamental difference. Radio, I have a prescribed amount of time to fill and I must fill it. Digital, I have a thing to talk about and I talk about it until I'm done. Those are two very different requirements when you think about where is the quality of the content coming from, right? If my topic is only worth 15 minutes of my time in a podcast, then guess what I do? I put out a 15-minute podcast.
Yeah.
Because I can. Why wouldn't I?
Well,
it's a very fundamental problem, right?
It is. You're right about the fundamental problem. I just wonder, given the structural disadvantage that you're identifying, and maybe it's deck chairs on the Titanic, right? And it doesn't matter because of this structural problem. I wonder if this is, maybe this is just the theme of too much tradition. This is just the rhythm of it. This is what we do at this time of year. And they would be better off having Jeff Schwartz on going, we have Schwartz on and he's going to tell you who the Niners should get with their offensive line pick. And the customer, I believe, would be more interested in that. You'd have more customers for that than for the Giants. Obviously, they see the rating sheet and I don't. There are people who legitimately want Giants baseball discussed. Larry Kruger does a ton of Niners and on the side does some Giants, but it just seems like, and I got, when I tweeted that, there were some people in the business. There was somebody who, I don't know if I should reveal, should I reveal? Because this is sort of business practices. I guess I should. Danny Parkins was saying to me that out in Chicago, he really tries to do Bears, even though it's Cubs season, because he recognizes it. It just seems like that's a fundamental hole in the industry of trying to treat the sports almost like they're equal in audience interest, and they're just not. It's even more skewed now, where the event sports are just bigger than the inventory.
Well, it was something that John and I did in radio. We made the decision, like, we're just going to talk about football all the time. But we had a 2-hour radio show. And it's not that we didn't talk about other stuff. It's easier to do that in 2 hours. If they did what you're suggesting, which is they only talked about the 49ers every hour, every minute, all the time, is nothing happening right now, right? So you have to, the other thing you have to consider with radio is partnerships, right? Like KNBR is the flagship for the Giants. So if they don't talk about the Giants and put you in a position to be interested about the Giants, then they hurt their own product, right? For the same reason when the NHL was on ESPN, ESPN talked about the NHL when the NHL was not on ESPN. ESPN talked about it less. So you do just have that fundamental problem of, well, if I'm going to be partners, don't I have to try and make my own thing worth it to people and interesting to people? And again, Larry's a good example, right? He does Niners content and Giants content on YouTube, and you get to choose which one.
Yep.
You get to choose. If the Giants play a 17-inning game that results in Bob Melvin, the manager, coming out of retirement and hitting the game-winning home run, and you've committed, and we're only talking Niners, then you miss the story the next day, right?
Yeah.
So you can't, It's dangerous because you go down that road and then they become a World Series team and you've conditioned everybody to think that you don't know shit about baseball. Now, why will I come to you for baseball?
It's like the San Francisco Chronicle and the Warriors when they got great. And it's just, well, you guys haven't been around. And people are going to look to other outlets. You don't have credibility here, or even just the reps and even just the familiarity and the connection. Okay. Final outsiders, contrarian, wackadoo theory that you can disabuse me of. It's a little bit tricky to flesh out here. I am going to proclaim the following, a fake smart guy take, generally. That's kind of true when it comes to the Niners. I've seen a lot of people say, oh my God, when you pay the quarterback, you're suddenly screwed. Teams have to try to win the Super Bowl before the quarterback gets paid. And this has become this sort of wise, this sort of, it's almost like a hipster. I understand sport track. I understand the contracts, and you don't know when the quarterback gets paid. Everything gets so much harder and blah, 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 blah. And to that I say, compared to what? Because I've noticed that none of the teams that go the other direction do anything. Like, the teams that pay their quarterbacks a lot of money are the only teams that are any good. Right. So I look at it and I go, people are going, oh my God, the Bills, they're so screwed now. They're so screwed. They're going to go from paying Josh Allen one sum of money to paying him $30 million more. I would say the Bills are screwed because of other decisions they've made. $30 million extra dollars, you spread that out over 52 other guys. It's not really, you know, it's not, the salary cap is what, around $254 million. You know, it's a thing. It's a thing you have to account for, but you're going to rise and fall on the basis of your draft picks and your other decisions. The Niners, I think, are in a position where they have spent all willy-nilly in a few different ways that it will be a legitimate squeeze and crunch when and if Brock Purdy gets that big contract. So it's kind of true for the Niners, but I'm proclaiming it, Guy. I'm proclaiming it a bit of a fake smart guy take. What say you?
Well, I think you described it correctly. There's a fake smart guy take that might be right. Yeah. Like, Patrick Mahomes got paid a lot of money, but is also the best quarterback, so his team can still elevate. But really, let's think about that for a second. He also has an elite defense with very good players on defense. They had two of the best corners in the league playing together. They have the best pass rusher in the NFL, maybe. Second best, you know, whatever. Like, an elite guy. They drafted really well, have good linebackers, have an excellent defensive coordinator. Their defensive coordinator is so good that Niners just tried to hire him very unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
And they have a Hall of Fame head coach. So is Patrick Mahomes carrying them? Or is he carrying them as much as a quarterback can carry them? And championship teams just always have a lot of good players.
Yeah.
They do, right? Phil Jackson, he had Jordan. Yeah, well, okay. Who wins championships without superstar players? It's such a dumb argument. Where you get into trouble is not when you pay Josh Allen. I think we'll find out. I think Josh Allen's the kind of quarterback that can carry you, but he got a lot of criticism this year. Where you get into trouble is when you pay a quarterback who can't carry you, Dak Prescott. But I would argue the problem with the Cowboys, because Coward had a take the other day that the Niners will become the Cowboys when they pay Brock Purdy. The Cowboys have been kind of in the championship mix. I think what stops them from winning a championship is I don't think their coach is good enough. I think the 49ers coach is much better than the Cowboys coach. So I think there's some truth to that take in the sense that it does just make it a lot harder when you have less money to spend on other players. Money helps you draft. The two things, right? You have the money and you have the draft. Those are the ways you build your team. If you're really good in the draft, then you can make mistakes with money. If you're really good with your money, then you can make mistakes in the draft. But you can't make mistakes with both. You have to. You just can't. You just can't. But fundamentally, to your point, yeah, the most expensive quarterbacks tend to be on the teams that compete for the championships. Or the teams that compete for the championships ultimately have the most expensive quarterbacks.
You're going to be making hard decisions no matter what. And the Chiefs just made a hard decision where they parted ways with their number one cornerback. And that works for them because this is the surrounding greatness. It's not just Patrick Mahomes. They've got a genius defensive coordinator, as you mentioned. And for whatever reason, cornerback is a position they seem to be just able to develop very quickly. And that gives them an advantage. And then they can spend not just on Mahomes, but they don't have just perhaps the best pass rusher. They paid him a lot of money. And, you know, they're paying the right guys. They're making prudent choices. They're drafting well. This is what you need. I think the whole watch out Niners when Brock gets paid conversation is a bit of an offshoot, a bit of a reboot of the broader this guy's a pumpkin conversation. It's true. It's going to be hard. The Niners have so much money tied up in some of these guys. The Bosa contract, he really negotiated the hell out of them. And maybe they play that negotiation different if they had more faith in Purdy coming off the injury, knowing they'd have to pay Purdy. But, you know, I do think that the conversation, there's a little bit of, oh, this guy's only good because the surrounding talent and then the talent goes away and he will suck. And it's got a bit of a flavor of that. So it's a legitimate issue for the team, but
which is connected, sorry to interrupt you, Ethan, but that argument's not done. We don't know yet. Is he worth whatever money he may get if he's solid? We don't know yet. I don't think the jury's still, he's answered a lot of questions, but is he an elite quarterback? That comes over time.
Yeah. Well, if it's a moot point. If he does it again, then it's almost a moot point because he's going to get paid like it.
I mean, if he does it the exact same way again, it makes it very interesting because it was arguable, right? Like people had this argument that you're talking about all year long. Can I ask you one question before we go?
Yes.
If my voice, let's say, I don't even know what this percentage is. If my voice from 100% right now, I'm probably at, I don't know, 30%, right? I don't know. But if my voice only gets marginally better, will I have to change careers?
No.
I disagree.
Interesting.
So why?
I don't think so. Okay. I've forgotten over the course of this podcast, I've forgotten that you even had a different voice at some point. This is now normal to me.
Okay. So I could keep podcasting. Could I keep my play-by-play work?
It's a great question.
No chance.
Probably not.
This is almost
like everybody decided to pay tight ends half of wide receivers. Should they? Is that, you know, reflective of what the audience cares about? Maybe the audience wants a little scratch.
I should not be hired. If I'm hired to do play-by-play with this voice, then I'm being hired for the wrong reasons. Because I must be amazing at something else. Because part of the job fundamentally is to talk in a way that is pleasing to people.
I mean, who's to say, just like, who's to say the New York accent's better than the Southern accent?
Yeah, I think we can all agree that, like, the sound of a trash truck is just no one sleeps better to the sound of a trash truck driving up their street, right? Like, I think we can make a blanket statement on that. Like, that's not a good sound.
Well, you know, I hope that you get to continue to pursue your career in any condition on that front, but I'm very impressed with your other career and the way in which you have used this. I mean, this is what we'll end on. I'm just so into how you've used this, how you've got a command of the medium that I do not have. I just throw clips onto YouTube. I don't know what works for gripping an audience, but you've used this deficiency of yours to rope people in, and you build up a little dramatic tension on some of these videos because the people are waiting to hear what you're going to sound like, and you really bask in it. And I've just been so impressed how you've used it. Well, feeling this need to pump out content for the reasons we talked about, you're not just doing it blithely. You're really in control of your instrument over here, scratchy as it might be.
Well, you find out that people, and I mean this I don't want to sound overly dramatic, but people care. If they listen to you talk every day, then they care, Ethan, if you are suddenly sick and they want you to be better. And so, I had no choice. I either had to do nothing or lean into it. Those were the two options because it's not good. It's unpleasant to listen to. Okay. So those are the two options. So I chose option two, and it's like, people are very nice about it. I don't think they want to, you know, whatever. I think it helps that it's like, there's guy says he's going to get better. So fine, we'll deal with it. And I said, this is how I sound forever. You're like, unsubscribe. But you know, it's like a reality TV show saying like, coming up season six, Kim's medical procedure goes wrong. And then there's like a quick clip of like the surgeon going like, we need more blood. You know, like it can't be your fastball. You know, it better be just sometimes you use that pitch. So,
well, I think
sooner rather than later, hopefully.
I think you've been quite resourceful in how you've used it. I don't think it's as unpleasant as you feel like it is. I think I would be frustrated too if I were you. Promote, plug away. Where do we find you right now in your recovery?
Just you can search me. I don't know, Guy Haberman, YouTube. Podcast or Instagram, Twitter, whatever. I don't whatever. If someone wanted to find me at an hour and 36 minutes, they would have Google, you know, they can Google. I think promotions are largely pointless. You know what I mean? Except like, we can find whatever we want.
Except for Larry Kruger's Pig in a Pickle. That's that promotion.
Well, yeah, but he tells you about Pig in a Pickle, but he doesn't say like, go to 3675. Or maybe he says it, but that doesn't, people just Google it. You know, I love when people send me directions. Like, just give me the address. I have a phone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to work in an analogy there where Ayuk and Purdy, he's like 1990s meeting up with somebody, you know, where Purdy can trust him to show up at the spot because there are no cell phones or what have you. You got to trust the guy's going to show up at the time he says he's going to show up.
How did we do it?
That's one of the reasons I love Chuck Klosterman's book on the 90s. He actually, for many pages, talks about what it was like back then and what we've forgotten. Is we adjust to things, Guy, just like this voice of yours. We adjust to things. We learn to love it. This has been fantastic. You might not think so, but I think so.
Do you know a book? Have you read Working by Studs Terkel?
No.
That's my book recommendation for today. Maybe you have. It's
where
old.
Where he's interviewing all these different people. Yes. About their jobs long time ago. Long time ago, read it.
It's a very popular book, so I don't think I'm recommending something to people, but they don't know. But if you don't know, it's a very interesting book.
It is.
That's it.
I immediately acted as though I hadn't read it, which is a bad idea of me. People need to think I'm an intellectual and that I've read everything. So that was a mistake by me. Anyway, thanks so much, Guy.
Thanks, you.